Calling all lovers of mystery and fans of a good story. If you haven't already heard me talk about June's journey, you're in for a treat. It's time to don your detective hat in this free hidden object mobile game that delves into the captivating journey of June Parker, a self-proclaimed detective on a quest to unravel the mystery surrounding her sister's untimely death. In June's journey, you get to play as June, deciphering clues and unveiling secret plots within thousands of beautifully illustrated scenes. And did I mention it's set in the glitzy 1920s? New chapters are added weekly, so you will never run out of new thrills to uncover, and you can also personalize and decorate your very own Orchid Island where the story takes place. How sharp are your detective skills? Find out when you download June's Journey on your Android or iOS device, or play online via Facebook Games. Your detective journey awaits. I'm someone who loves trying out different makeup looks, but doesn't really wear much on a daily basis, so I like to focus on making sure I have high quality staples. And whether you like a fresh face, full glam, or somewhere in between, you've probably seen Thrive Cosmetics Viral Tubing Mascara. I've certainly seen it everywhere. You know the one in the turquoise tube? So that mascara, along with all of Thrive Cosmetics' beauty products, are certified 100% vegan and cruelty-free, which I look for in makeup, and they've got excellent quality to match. And something I didn't know from all the mascara videos I've seen is that for every product sold, Thrive Cosmetics donates either that same product, another product that is needed more, or a monetary donation. They've worked with over 500 nonprofits to help with a wide range of causes like supporting cancer survivors, people experiencing homelessness, education access, and so much more. Knowing that makes me feel even better about using their products. And I do enjoy using them. Like I said, I like having high quality staples, and so my favorites are products that are multi-purpose, like the Brilliant Eye Brightener. It comes in a bunch of colors, and I like using them as eyeliner, eyeshadow, and even highlighter. Thrive Cosmetics is luxury beauty that gives back. Right now, you can get an exclusive 20% off your first order at thrivecosmetics.com/thrive. That's Thrive Cosmetics, CAUSEMETICS, .com/thrive for 20% off your first order.
Hi, I'm Madigan, and you're listening to Your Angry Neighborhood Feminist, a podcast that explores the world through a personal feminist perspective. Hello, everyone. I hope that you all had just a splendid week. Mine was both wonderful and awful. I had just the absolute worst head cold all last week. I feel like I'm still getting rid of some of the side effects of it, so I apologize if I still sound a little bit nasally, but today was the first day that I really felt like I could do this episode, that I was healthy sounding enough and feeling enough to do this episode. I was feeling better on Friday, and then on Saturday I had two baby showers to go to, so yesterday, I was just absolutely beat. I tried recording this episode in the morning and it was a real struggle. My voice was really rough. I was coughing a lot still. So this morning I woke up and I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to redo it. If anything, it's going to be better because it's like I've had a rehearsal already. And I'm really excited to get into today's episode because it does have a really personal meaning for me as well. I know I've spoken on the show in the past about my Czechoslovakian / Romani ancestry, and a couple years ago during the pandemic when I had a little bit more time on my hands, I got really into looking at this website that had all of these old archives. I think it's called like archives.com or .org. I like them better than ancestry.com. But I was really able to go pretty far back into my family's history. And I have always been really, really curious about this particular part of my family because when I was younger, my mom gave me this pamphlet that was all about the Kier history. That's my grandfather's last name, my mom's maiden name. And I wish I remembered more details from that pamphlet. So, Mom, if you're listening to this episode, I would definitely love a copy at some point. But I remember learning about their nomadic lifestyle, their love of craftsmanship and music and art, and I felt a real connection to that part of my family history, as both of my parents are artists and I've always identified myself as being an artist. And then there's also another layer of the word gypsy and how it's been used throughout history and how it's used still to this day. And there's a lot of argument out there because it is technically a racial slur, but it's also a word that I think a lot of people, Romani people included, have tried to reclaim. And the history of the meaning of the word has really been lost. And I think that's why a lot of people don't understand why it's a racial slur. So we're going to get into all of that this episode, starting out with the history. So the Romani people have been somewhat mysterious to historians for quite some time because of their nomadic lifestyle. And from the very beginning of writing about the Romani people, they were unsure where exactly they originated from. The reason that the term gypsy exists is actually because it is taken from the word Egypt or Egyptian, thinking that the Romani people originated from that part of the world. But the Romani or Roma people, I'm going to be going back and forth between those two words, are an ethnic group of Indo-Aryan origin who traditionally lived a nomadic, itinerant lifestyle. The Romani people are believed to have originated in the Indian subcontinent, the region of present-day Rajasthan, located in northwest India. Then it seems in waves, groups of Romani people began traveling west, which is thought by historians to have occurred in about around 1000 CE. The Roma population moved into the Ghaznavid Empire and later by the Byzantine Empire or the Eastern Roman Empire. It's believed that the Roma people reached Europe in the 13th and 14th centuries, and though they were widely dispersed, their most concentrated populations at this time were in Bulgaria, Hungary, Romania, Spain, and Turkey. There are times that people will confuse Roma or Romani people for Romanian people as well, and that's probably due to the fact that there was, and I believe still is, a relatively large population of Romani people living in Romania. Learning about when the first Romani people started traveling to Europe, I was curious about my own family's history. My great-great-grandma on my mom's side of the family, Mary Tuma Kier, was an immigrant from quote-unquote Bohemia, according to my research. They say that Mary was born in 1862, and by 1920, she was living in Le Sueur, Minnesota. Interestingly, she passed away on my birth date, July 9th, in 1952, when my mother would have been a little over a year old. It says in her records online that her family emigrated to the United States when she was just 8 years old in 1870. I also learned that she gave her son a very unfortunate name, Otto G. Adolf. Ugh. Though he was born in 1902, so I'll forgive it. Mary's mother, my great-great-great-grandmother, also named Mary, is listed as being born in the Czech Republic in 1841, and she married František Tuma, born in 1831 in quote-unquote Bohemia. My grandfather's father, Matej Kier, was also born in the Czech Republic in 1819, but it's unclear when he emigrated with his family, though I saw that his father, Pavel, passed away while they were still living in the Czech Republic in 1830. It's all just so fascinating, and it really made me feel like I had a better connection with my past. Anyway, back to some history. Sorry to go off on a little tangent there. Descriptions of the Romani people started appearing in the 13th century. And in the Byzantine records, the Romani were mentioned as being, quote, wizards who are satanically inspired and pretend to predict the unknown. Hence why there's probably such a thick stereotype about Romani people being fortune tellers to this day. When the Roma came to Europe in the early 1300s, they were written about in the diary of an Irish Franciscan friar who described them as people who, quote, rarely or never stop in one place for more than 30 days, but always, as if cursed by God, are nomad and outcast. After the 30th day, they wander from field to field with small, oblong, black, low tents, like those of the Arabs, and from cave to cave, because the places inhabited by them becomes, after the term of 30 days, so full of vermin and other filth that it is impossible to live in their neighborhood. Yeah, they weren't given the warmest welcome, and they didn't have the best reputation. And I also think that it's a pretty clear example of racism already. The enslavement of the Roma people, mostly taken as prisoners of war, is first documented in the late 15th century in the Danubian Principalities, near modern-day Romania. There, the Roma were divided into different groups according to who owned them, including nobles, monasteries, and the state. The Romani reached the Balkans and Bohemia in the 14th century. By the 15th century, they had expanded their reach to Germany, France, Italy, Spain, and Portugal. Then by the 16th century, Russia, Denmark, Scotland, and Sweden. The first Romani recorded living in Germany was in 1407, but within 10 years, they were completely expelled. In 1482, anti-Romani laws were passed in Brandenburg, Germany. Spain also passed their own anti-Romani law and subjected Romani people to the Inquisition, run by the Catholic Church, who labeled them as heretics. They were also expelled from France by Louis VII in 1502. Then Henry VIII expelled them from England in 1526. If any Romani person were to be caught within the borders of England, they would be killed. In 1536, anti-Romani laws were passed in Denmark. They were expelled from Portugal to Brazil in 1538. And there were also anti-Romani laws passed in Scotland, Flanders, Bohemia, Poland, and Lithuania between 1540 and 1557. And this just makes me wonder if the Romani people truly did want to be as nomadic as these historians are making them out to be, or if they were nomadic because they were being pushed out of every single place they tried to find a home in. It is really interesting to me that my ancestors seemed to be able to stick around in the Czech Republic and in quote-unquote Bohemia for some time, but I'm sure there are many people whose ancestors were just all over the place, and maybe if I was able to dig further back into my own history, I would see other places that my ancestors had lived. But it really does make me think about whether or not this stereotype of the poverty-stricken, nomadic, artsy, quirky people comes from the fact that they were never welcomed in any place. They were never given a safe space to build a community and build prosperity, you know? In the 16th century, many Romani people who lived in Eastern and Central Europe worked as musicians, metal craftsmen, and soldiers. As the Ottoman Empire expanded, it relegated the Romani, who were seen as having no obvious permanent affiliation to a certain profession, rated them as the lowest rung on the social ladder. There was even folklore created around the Romani people in order to foster even more negative feelings about them. There is this mythical group called the Dacianos, or the Comprachicos, who are said to change their physical appearance to look like a human in order to manipulate children and kidnap them. I don't think I need to tell you why this is incredibly harmful, right? These Dacianos or Comprachicos then attempt to stunt the child's growth through different forms of torture, such as physical restraint, muzzling their faces to deform them, slitting their eyes, dislocating their joints, and causing their bones to malform. This is like an OG terrifying fairy tale. Hans Christian Andersen would never. The resulting deformed adults are then made to live as charlatans or were sold to lords and ladies to be used as court fools and something vile called court dwarfs, who were delivered as gifts to kings and queens, made to stand next to the king and queen in a royal court during public appearances and ceremonies. The purposes for having someone who was smaller than the king standing next to him was to then make the king look even bigger and more powerful. Gross. The word Comprachicos, literally meaning child buyers, was first coined by author Victor Hugo in his novel, The Man Who Laughs. I'm going to get more into Victor Hugo in just a little bit. The Romani people began to emigrate to the United States during colonial times, with small groups living in Virginia and French Louisiana at first. There were actually 4 Romani people on board with Christopher Columbus on his 3rd voyage, but they were all enslaved. The larger scale emigration began in the 1860s, and the largest number of Romani people immigrated in the early 20th century. Now we need to get into even more anti-Romani sentiment. The term anti-Gypsyism is recognized by the European Parliament and the European Commission, as well as by a wide cross-section of civil society. Throughout history, the Romani tribes were subjected to persecution and humiliation in Europe. They were stigmatized as habitual criminals, social misfits, and drunks, prostitutes, and homeless vagrants. But as we move further into the 20th century and new powers emerge in Europe, the most intense era of persecution of the Romani people began, leading to the eventual annihilation of a majority of their people. It's estimated that anywhere from 22,000 to 700,000 Romani were murdered in Europe during World War II. In the late 19th century, with the emergence of scientific racism and social Darwinism, linking social differences with racial differences provided the German public with pseudoscientific justification for the prejudice against Roma and Jewish people. It was argued and believed by many at this time that people of different races were not of a single species, but had different and distinct biological origins, making them inhuman. Therefore, a racial hierarchy was created, defining certain minority groups as the other on the basis of whacked out biology. As for the Roma's quality of living in Germany at this time, it was incredibly stifling. They were denied the ability to do any of their traditional work of craftsmanship and artisans, and their way of living was squashed. The industrial development devalued their services as craftsmen, resulting in the disintegration of their communities and social marginalization. In 1899, under the Weimar Republic, the Imperial Police Headquarters in Munich established the information services on Romani by the security police, which would keep records like identification cards, fingerprints, photographs, etc. It would also have continued surveillance on the Romani community. In 1911, the Bavarian Ministry of the Interior organized a conference in Munich to discuss the gypsy problem and coordinate efforts against them. Roma and the Weimar public were forbidden from entering public swimming pools, parks, and other recreational areas, and depicted throughout Germany and Europe as a whole as criminals and spies. By 1926 in Bavaria, Roma were not allowed to travel to the region, and those already living in the area were to be, quote, kept under control so that there was no longer anything to fear from them with regard to safety in the land. The Roma people who were unable to prove regular employment were also sent to labor camps for up to 2 years. The Bavarian laws then became a model for German states and other neighboring countries. Often the focus of the anti-Roma movement was the demand for them to give up their nomadic ways and settle in a specific region, both within the German Empire and the Weimar Republic. Once they settled, they would then be isolated into a single area of a town or city and surveilled by the state for the sake of crime prevention. So essentially, they were like, the best way to deal with the Romani people is to round them up, make them live in essentially what I think they're describing is like a ghetto where they can be surveilled and watched because they are just so dangerous that they shouldn't be allowed anywhere else in Germany or Europe or anywhere else. The Nazis were actually inspired by the United States during this time and what we did to the Native American population when the colonists came over. Just like the white people of the colonies deported all the Native Americans off to reservations, the Nazis wanted to deport all of the Romani people off into their own secluded living situation. It became mandatory for the Roma people to wear identity cards in Prussia beginning in 1927, leading to 8,000 Roma being processed with mandatory fingerprinting and photographing. I actually have some ancestors from Prussia as well, but I'm pretty sure they would all be in the States by 1927. In 1929, the German state of Hessen proposed the Law for the Fight Against the Gypsy Menace, and the Center for the Fight Against Gypsies was opened. After centuries of discrimination and abuse, it would all accumulate in the Romani Holocaust, also called Porajamos, which literally means devouring, an effort put out by the Nazis beginning in the 1930s. Adolf Hitler named the Roma people as enemies of a race-based state in 1935, thereby placing them in the same category as Jewish people. The Department of Racial Hygiene and Population Biology also began to experiment on Romani people to determine criteria for their racial classification. The Nazis established the Racial Hygiene and Demographic Biology Research Unit in 1936 to conduct an in-depth study into the so-called Gypsy Question and provide data to create a new Reich Gypsy Law. Again, using bad science to try to prove their racist ideologies. And the results are actually quite interesting, and it confused me for a moment. So I'm going to read this, and then I'm going to explain it. It was concluded that the Romani people who were not of quote-unquote pure gypsy blood posed the most danger to a German racial purity and should be deported or eliminated. Pure-blooded Romani were free to continue to gallivant along unhindered, at least at this time. And this was because the Nazis believed that if you were a pure-blooded Romani person, that you were Aryan. Because, like I said at the very beginning of this episode, they are an Indo-Aryan race. So in their eyes, if you were proven to be of the utmost purest Romani blood, you were white. But if you were not, you were considered to be a problem. And I really don't even know how they would be able to prove this. It just seems like the vast amount of people would probably be considered quote-unquote mixed anyways. This new gypsy law prevented any further intermingling of blood in order to keep the German nation strictly German. The Nuremberg Race Laws, passed in September of 1935, contained the first law for the protection of German blood and honor, which forbade intermarrying of Germans with Jewish people. The second law, the Reich Citizenship Law, stripped Jews of their German citizenship. By November, Germany expanded these Nuremberg laws to include the Roma people. In December 1937, a decree on crime prevention provided the justification for the roundup of the Romani people. The Roma people would be sent to concentration camps like Dachau, Dieselstrasse, Marzahn, and Wenhausen. During the deadliest phase of the Holocaust, Operation Reinhard, between 1941 and 1943, large amounts of Roma were killed in these camps. And due to disagreements between Allied countries about whether full-blooded Romani people should be spared, the persecution of Roma was not regionally consistent. In France, between 3,000 and 6,000 Roma were deported to German concentration camps. Further east, in the Balkan states and Soviet Union, mobile killing squads traveled from village to village, massacring the inhabitants and rarely leaving any records of how many were killed in this way. One American historian, Timothy Snyder, believes that the Soviet Union alone were responsible for the deaths of about 8,000 documented Roma in the killing squads sweep east. The only countries whose local populations did not participate in the hunt for Roma people were Denmark and Greece. In December 1942, Heinrich Himmler, just 6 days after meeting with Adolf Hitler, signed an order to begin mass deportations of Romani people to Auschwitz-Birkenau. All Romanis, full-blooded or not, were to be put on the same level as Jewish people and placed in concentration camps, he declared. Camp authorities housed the Romani people in a special compound they called the Gypsy Family Camp, where some 23,000 Roma, Sinti, and Dalari were deported together. While in Auschwitz, Romani people wore mandatory brown or black triangular patches, the symbol for asocials, or green ones, the symbol for professional criminals, and less frequently, the letter Z, which stood for the German word for gypsy. I tried pronouncing it a few times and just butchered the hell out of it, so I'm going to sit that one out. In May of 1944 at Auschwitz, SS guards attempted to liquidate the Gypsy family camp, but were met with unexpected resistance. When the Romani people were ordered to come out, they flat out refused. They had been warned ahead of time and armed themselves with homemade weapons like irons, pipes, shovels, and other tools. This made the SS back up and realize they couldn't come at the Roma directly, so they withdrew for several months. After the deportation of a number of Roma people to other camps, it was then that the SS moved in against the remaining 2,898 inmates on August 2nd, murdering nearly all of the remaining Romani inmates in gas chambers. Records show that at least 19,000 to 23,000 Roma were sent to Auschwitz and murdered there. The German allies who participated in the annihilation of Romani people, such as Slovakia, France, and Italy, though they participated in the Nazi plan to exterminate Romani, most of the Roma people actually living in these countries thankfully survived. The Romani people were also persecuted by the Ustasi regime in Croatia, where tens of thousands of Romani people were killed in the Jasenovac concentration camp. In Yugoslavia, around 9,000 Romani were killed. The Ustasi regime virtually annihilated the country's entire Romani population, killing an estimated 25,000 and deporting around 26,000. At the start of the war, in Germany alone, about 20,000 Romani people lived there, and 15,000 would be killed in the Holocaust. Another 15,150 were killed in France, about 28,000 were killed in Hungary. In Romania, anywhere between 19,000 and 36,000 were killed. In the Soviet Union, 30 to 35,000. In Yugoslavia, 26,000 to 90,000. In total, it is believed that up to 800,000 Roma people were killed through Nazi actions, and there weren't that many of them to begin with. And it wasn't just harsh labor in gas chambers that the Roma were subjected to. They were also subjected to being used as human subjects in medical experiments. Even the doctor of death himself, Josef Mengele, who worked at Auschwitz, carried out experiments on the Romani prisoners. This next section is rough, so listen with care. His experiments included pressure chambers, testing drugs on them, freezing them, attempting to change their eye color by injecting chemicals into their eyes. And he would do that to children. He would also perform various amputations and other brutal surgeries, all done without anesthesia. And Mengele seemed particularly interested in Romani children. He would first bring them sweets or toys to endear himself to them, and the kids would even call him Uncle Mengele. Ugh. And then once he would gain their trust, he would walk them personally to the gas chambers. For any of you listening who have knowledge of Joseph Mengele's other twisted interests, you would know that he also had a fascination with twins. And there's also a record of a set of Romani twins named Guido and Ina, aged 4, who were taken by Mengele. What Dr. Mengele did to them while they were away is, it's so unbelievably vile that I don't know if I'm going to be able to say it out loud, but I feel like giving this example of absolute fucking depravity could maybe get the point across to how absolutely horrendous Dr. Mengele's actions and the actions of the Nazis were at this time. Not that I have to give all of you a reminder, but truly, this is terrible. So, trigger warning, if you don't want to hear something graphic, fast forward about a minute. When the twins were returned from Dr. Mengele, they were sewn together, back to back. Their wounds were very infected, and they would scream day and night. Their mother, Stella, managed to get some morphine for them and then killed her own children in order to end their suffering. Oh, I started crying when I read that the first time, and I feel like I'm going to have to take a cry break again. That might be one of the most vile things I have ever had to say out loud in my life. Most of Mengele's victims, if they did survive the experiments, were eventually killed and dissected. There is only one known Roma survivor of Dr. Mengele, and one of the very few to survive one of Mengele's experiments in total, and her name was Marguerite Krauss. Marguerite is recognizable from a famous photo taken by Reimar Gilsenbach, where she's leaning out of a window with the tattoo on her arm visible. Marguerite was a Czech Roma and was sent to Auschwitz when she was 13 years old, where she and her family were held in the Gypsy family camp. While at Auschwitz, Marguerite endured horrendous and inhumane experimentation from Dr. Mengele, but she, unlike the rest of her family, would be able to leave Auschwitz. After the murder of her family in the liquidation of the camp in 1944, she was moved to Ravensbrück and used for forced labor. I tried to look up more about Marguerite, but there isn't a whole lot out there. In the Protectorate of Bohemia and Moravia, a partially annexed territory of Nazi Germany after the German occupation of Czech lands, the Nazi genocide was so thorough that it exterminated the majority of the Bohemian Romani speakers. This led to their language becoming extinct in 1970. And when I got to this point in my research, I had to stop and do a little bit more introspection. Because, like I said, a lot of my family was already in the United States at this time. But my grandfather was not very far removed from this part of his family's history. And my grandfather was a Bohemian Romani man. My grandpa fought in World War II, and he was part of the OSS, which was part of the creation of the CIA, which is, you know, obviously kind of problematic. But I really had to stop and think about my grandfather and how this kind of information at the time would have affected him. And I really wonder what his feelings were. My mom always said that her dad never really liked to talk about things, and I'm sure also being part of the CIA meant that he straight up couldn't talk about a lot of things. But I do wonder the emotions that he had behind this terrible war. At the end of the war, Germany claimed that the Roma people had not been targeted for racial reasons like the Jews and Sinti had, and that they were not eligible for war reparations for this reason. I'm sorry, what? At the Nuremberg trials, there were never any conversations as to whether the Sinti and Roma were entitled, like the Jewish people, to receive reparations. It wasn't until 1979 when Western Germany finally admitted that the persecution of the Roma people was in fact based on racial grounds. It wasn't until 1982 that West Germany formally recognized that genocide had been committed against the Romani. But it wouldn't be until 2016 that an agreement was made to give 2,500 euros to each of the handful of Romani survivors. 2,500? Really? There's no official or reliable population count for Romani people in Europe today, but it's estimated to be between 10 and 12 million people. Today, many of them live in Western Europe, in slums, often without electricity or running water, and many struggle to get the health care that they so desperately need. And if they were given the reparations that they deserved at the time, maybe they would have been able to rebuild their lives and not continue on with generations of poverty and discrimination against them. To this day, many Romani people still live with the daily threat of forced evictions, police harassment, and violent attacks. Especially Romani children who often suffer segregation in schools and receive a lower standard of education. The Roma have more health problems, lower literacy levels, and in Central and Eastern Europe, their life expectancy is 10 years less than the average European. This small amount of money did absolutely nothing to help a population that is still being discriminated against. In Czechoslovakia, after the war, another area where my ancestors are from, the Roma were labeled as socially degraded, and Romani women were forcibly sterilized as part of a state policy to reduce their population. This was after the war. This policy was implemented with large financial incentives, as they were told that they would not receive welfare payments if they were not sterilized. These women were also given misinformation, and sometimes these operations were done after the administration of drugs and without their consent at all. And of course, this is not to exclude all of the other groups of people that were annihilated and discriminated against during and even after World War II. I just think that this is something that is really rarely spoken about. And there are a lot of differences between the Roma and the Jewish experience, both during and after the war. According to a sociologist and Roma activist, Nico Fortuna, there's a difference between the Jewish and Roma deportees. The Jews were shocked and can remember the year, date, and time it happened. The Roma shrugged it off. They said, "Of course I was deported. I'm Roma. These things just happen to a Roma." The Roma mentality is different from the Jewish mentality. For example, a Roma came to me and asked, "Why do you care so much about these deportations? Your family was not deported." I went, "I care as a Roma." And the guy said back, "I do not care because my family were brave, proud Roma that were not deported." For the Jews, it was total, and everyone knew this, from bankers to pawnbrokers. For the Roma, it was selective and not comprehensive. The Roma were only exterminated in a few parts of Europe, such as Poland, the Netherlands, Germany, and France. In Romania and much of the Balkans, only nomadic Roma and social outcast Roma were deported. This matters and influences the Roma mentality. I found all of that incredibly interesting. Another Roma activist, Ian Hancock, says that the Roma aren't traditionally apt to keeping alive terrible memories from their history, saying nostalgia is a luxury for others. Due to the annihilation of their culture, the illiteracy, the lack of social institutions, and rampant discrimination against Roma today the Roma people have seemed to become a people with a lack of national consciousness and historical memory of the Holocaust because there is no Roma elite. There aren't a lot of Roma examples out there to look to.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the US. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm. You can shop from anywhere doing pretty much anything. You might shop while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast. And however you shop, we all know and love the thrill of the hunt. But do you also know how to get the thrill of the best deals? Because Rakuten shoppers do. With Rakuten, they get the deals they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Sephora, Nike, and even Expedia if you're looking to get some travel in. And getting cash back doesn't mean you have to miss out on sales because those can just be stacked right on top. It's easy to use and based on a simple idea. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back through PayPal or check. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
And now I want to get into the word gypsy as a slur. First, I'm going to give you my history with the word. My mom always told me that we were gypsies, that I was a descendant of gypsies. And that was something that was really fucking cool to me as a kid, because I think there had been some differing representations of what a quote-unquote gypsy was by the time the 90s came around. I was a big fan of Esmeralda from The Hunchback of Notre Dame as well, which, don't worry, we're gonna get into soon as well. But I always saw it as, like, a badge of honor. I thought it was really, really cool that I had that kind of history in my family. But I also really lacked an understanding of what it meant to be Roma, because that really wasn't mentioned a whole lot. And I feel like it wasn't until the past few years or so that people really started coming down on the word gypsy, and this topic has been discussed more. So let's get into the history of the word and the weight behind it, and I'm also going to get into my thoughts and how I use the word in my life. The U.S. Department of State has used a working definition of anti-Roma racism since it was adopted by the International Holocaust Remembrance Alliance as a legally non-binding definition in 2020. You heard me right, 2020. This effort was spearheaded by the Committee of the Genocide of the Roma. On October 8, 2020, they said, quote, acknowledging with concern that the neglect of the genocide of the Roma has contributed to the prejudice and discrimination of many Roma communities still experienced today, and accepting our responsibility to counter such forms of racism and discrimination, the IHRA adopts the following working definition of anti-Roma racism. Anti-Roma racism is a manifestation of individual expressions and acts, as well as institutional policies and practices, or marginalization, exclusion, physical violence, devaluation of Roma cultures and lifestyles, and hate speech directed at Roma, as well as other individuals and groups perceived, stigmatized, or persecuted during the Nazi era. This leads to the treatment of Roma as an alleged alien group and associates them with a series of pejorative stereotypes and distorted images that represent a specific form of racism. What's interesting and quite devastating to me is that more people are familiar with the slur gypsy than they are with the Roma people. And it's devastating that even I didn't really make that connection growing up. And it's crazy that I feel like I heard about gypsies, and I really wish I would have known the negative impact that using some of those words and celebrating certain things was actually really, really harmful to Roma people. Like, for example, you know when someone says they've been gypped, as in like something was ripped off or stolen from them? Well, I might be an idiot, but I never realized that this is incredibly racist against the Roma people, as it's implying that gypsies or Romani people are criminals. However, the word is sometimes positively embraced by the Romani people, as there are a few Romani organizers in the UK that use the word gypsy in their name, but there are also others that utterly reject it. There's also been different spellings along the way. Gypsy, sometimes spelled with two Ys, sometimes with an I after the G. And the word has several overlapping meanings in English law. In 1960, the Caravan Sites and Control Development Act in the UK defined gypsies as persons of nomadic habit of life, whatever their race or origin, but does not include members of an organized group or traveling showmen or persons engaged in traveling circuses traveling together as such. I just like that traveling circuses were mentioned in the law. All the while, gypsies were also recognized as an ethnic group in the Race Relations Act of 1976, again in the UK, making it incredibly complicated as to whether or not they are declaring them as being a race of people or not. In the last couple of decades or so, Western culture has decided to use the word gypsy and make it into something else by either sexualizing it or marketing it. This is something that happens to so many minority groups, as cultural appropriation for ridicule is not a new offense. The Roma history and culture are mocked and commodified into Halloween costumes and sexy festival outfits. The boho chic style has become popular over the last few years again, but it first became incredibly prominent in the 1960s. Predominantly white, middle-class Americans sought to bring this aesthetic to life, driven by the desire for a different, more liberated way of living. The romanticized view of this culture damages the Romani people who are still around today and live lives marked by marginalization, discrimination, persecution, and severe poverty. And the sexualization of the Romani people is also incredibly gross, as their cultural wear is traditionally very conservative, with no intention of being revealing. Yet, this is not how their style is represented in the media, is it? Yet, the Romani people themselves have been hyper-sexualized, transforming Romani women and girls into sexual objects in the eyes of the Western world. This practice contributes to the perception of Romani women as being easy or uninhibited. It makes them especially a target for sexual violence. Rates of domestic violence and sexual abuse are incredibly high against Romani women and girls, and because of the prejudice against them, a lot of times law enforcement does not take their plight seriously enough. Some people who identify as ethnically Roma are offended by the word gypsy, and most dictionaries have reservations about using it to mean Roma people, but there are some Roma people who don't mind being called gypsies and have embraced the term. There is also the uncapitalized gypsy, which has meanings that no longer have ties to ethnic or racial associations. But it's tricky. In the 1600s, the word gypsy was used to mean a man who is a cunning rogue, or for a woman who is deceitful, cunning, fickle, or the like. Years later, in Oxford's dictionary, the word gypsy appeared uncapitalized, and it seemed to be used to describe a scornful woman, and was especially applied to brunettes. Hey, In the midst of the 20th century, the word began being used to describe someone who is a free spirit or doesn't like to be in one place for long, a person with a career or way of life that's more unconventional, especially performers. Sometimes a non-unionized worker, like a trucker or a cab driver, would even be called a gypsy as well. So clearly, it's incredibly complicated. And like I said, in my life, gypsy had always been used incredibly positively. As my mom would always tell me that I was this descendant of gypsies, which I thought was super fucking cool. I loved the gypsies I saw in books and movies growing up. They were so beautiful and liberated seeming and so kind. I really felt for Esmeralda and how she was treated in The Hunchback of Notre Dame and thought that she was beautiful, smart, strong, and an all-around badass. Why wouldn't I want to be a gypsy? It wasn't until I grew up that I even learned that the word could be used as a slur. I've also spoken with friends of mine with the same lineage as myself, and they feel similarly about the word. But the people I spoke with are all American and white representing people, so probably not the best or most knowledgeable on the subject. There are so many words that have been used as slurs in the past that have been reclaimed by its people. For example, the gay community uses the gay F word quite frequently amongst themselves, as does the black community with the N word. And thanks to feminism, words like bitch, cunt, and slut have been reclaimed by many women. But of course, like with anything, it depends on the way these words are used. I remember way back when we first started the show, Keegan and I got in trouble for using the word queer in one of our episode titles. Our DMs were flooded with people who were telling us not to use that word. And then once we discussed it on the show, we were flooded with even more DMs of people saying that we should use the word because we're trying to reclaim it. And what's funny is now today, I like to classify myself as being a bi or queer person. I really like the word and I feel like it suits me. Also, queer means weird and I'm weird as fuck. And it was funny because Keegan and I had decided not to use that word for a long time, but now I wouldn't think twice about using it in the show. In linguistics, this is called reappropriation or resignification. This is the cultural process by which a group reclaims words or artifacts that were previously used in a disparaging way toward their group. Linguist Robin Brontsema suggested that there are three goals of reclamation. 1. Value reversal. Changing a meaning from a negative to a positive. 2. Neutralization. Changing the meaning from a pejorative to a neutral meaning. And then 3. Stigma exploitation. Retaining the derogatory nature of such terms as a reminder that a given group has been subject to unfair treatment. Reclamation is often described in terms of empowerment, which comes from taking the power away from a dominant group and taking control of your own and others' views of yourself. The reclamation process has also been credited with promoting social justice and building group solidarity. But reclaimed words often remain controversial for a time. Often, not all members of a given community are on board with the reclaiming of a particular word or slur, while in other cases, the word is seen as acceptable when used only by members of the community that has reclaimed it. What's interesting about the word gypsy, though, is that it has kind of gone through the opposite process of many of the examples I gave. People from my mom's generation used the word freely in the United States, and it wasn't until more recently that the word became known to the American public as a slur. Gypsy has also been used as a name. There's an incredibly famous entertainer by the name of Gypsy Rose Lee, who I actually started writing an episode on years ago and never finished. And of course, there's Gypsy Rose Blanchard, who killed her abusive mother and popped up all over our headlines a couple of months ago yet again. And I was really curious about the usage of gypsy as a name, and apparently the name came into public consciousness around the 1890s, and then it reached the same level of popularity again in the 90s, and it was still fairly popular in the 2000s as well. But even then, the number of babies being named gypsy was still relatively low. In 2021, only 30 babies in the United States were named gypsy. I have a feeling this number will continue to decrease, as on every baby naming site I went on, it described the name as being a racial slur as well, which I think should hopefully turn people away from using it as a name. So my feelings about it, I decided that I was going to use the word within this episode. I do still describe myself as being a descendant of gypsies at times, but I really like to mark the importance of my Romani ancestry now, especially as over the last couple of years, I've learned more and more about it. I've learned more about their history of discrimination, what happened to them during the Holocaust, what's continuing to happen to Roma people to this day. I think it's very important to be very careful how we use that word. I think it's a good rule of thumb that we should never use any sort of word in a pejorative way toward another person. The same thing goes for bitch and slut. I can be like, hey, bitch, what's up? But if I say, fuck you, bitch, that's incredibly different, right? The Western world has probably perpetuated this quote-unquote gypsy culture due to what we've seen in our media. There is one character who shines above all of the rest, and that is Esmeralda from The Hunchback of Notre Dame. Of course, I'm thinking of the Disney movie as it came out when I was 4 years old, and full disclosure, I was obsessed with Esmeralda as a kid. I had multiple different costumes of hers that I would wear like everyday clothes. But the first adaptation of The Hunchback of Notre Dame was written by Victor Hugo in 1831. Earlier in the episode, I mentioned Victor Hugo's novel, The Man Who Laughs. The book, The Man Who Laughs, which has also had many different adaptations done of it over the years, is about the life of a young nobleman who is known as Gwynplaine, who was disfigured as a child on the orders of the king. In the book, the king arranged the abduction of his 2-year-old son and legitimate heir, Fermain. The king sold Fermain to a band of wanderers called Comprachicos, criminals who mutilate and disfigure children, then force them to beg for alms or be exhibited as carnival freaks. It's interesting how he decided to tie them together. He definitely does this again in The Hunchback of Notre Dame, but it's a little bit different. Like I said, the first version of this book came out in 1831. The story focuses on Quasimodo, the hunchback of Notre Dame, and a seemingly Roma street dancer, Esmeralda, as well as Quasimodo's evil guardian, the archdeacon Claude Frollo, in 15th century Paris. In Hugo's version, Esmeralda is just 16 years old and is the romantic and sexual interest of many men in the novel, including Captain Phoebus, poet Pierre Gringoire, Archdeacon Claude Frollo, and of course, Quasimodo. Frollo is torn between his lust for Esmeralda and the rules of the Notre Dame Cathedral and orders Quasimodo to kidnap her. Esmeralda is the center of the drama in this story, as all of the men fight over her. But her character is quite an arc, going from the adored entertainer to being accused of being a witch. She's completely demonized because a man of the cloth has lustful feelings for her. Esmeralda is also given a false sense of safety and feels somewhat comfortable with the men around her, in particular Phoebus, who tells her that he will love and protect her, but really, he just wanted to get into her pants. However, there is so much negative attention pointed at Esmeralda in the story, she is the only person who shows Quasimodo any sort of kindness. In Victor Hugo's novel, Romani people were described as, quote, still uglier than men. Their faces were darker and always uncovered. They wore a sorry kirtle about their body, an old cloth woven with cords bound upon her shoulder, and their hair hanging like a horse's tail. The children are said to be so ugly that they, quote, would have frightened an ape. Esmeralda, however, is spared of this kind of vitriol from Victor Hugo and is described as a curiosity, the epitome of femininity, grace, and beauty. He wrote, quote, her skirt of varied colors swelling out below her slender waist, giving momentary glimpses of her fine-formed legs, her round, bared shoulders, her black hair, and her sparkling eyes. She looked like something more than human. Okay, this is gross for a number of reasons. One, she's 16 years old. Two, you are still classifying her as subhuman, even if you're saying she is so beautiful she can't possibly be real. But, and this is super important, and I didn't really even know this. I think I'd learned this a while ago and it refreshed my memory, but Esmeralda from Victor Hugo's novel is not, in fact, Roma. She is a non-Roma woman who was abducted as a baby by a group of Romani beggars and vagabonds. According to Hugo, her name was Agnes at birth. And the reason that Esmeralda is such an exceptional beauty is because she was raised amongst the Romani, but was not actually one of them. Because, as he believes, all Romani people are ugly. I think you're ugly, Victor. From Hugo to Disney, Esmeralda has always been portrayed in racist and sexist stereotypes. The actresses cast to play Esmeralda were typically fair-skinned women, but often ethnically ambiguous enough to play Roma, such as an Italian, Armenian, Jewish, or Latina woman. In the Disney film, they did darken Esmeralda's skin, and they gave her thick black hair and eyebrows, gold jewelry adorning her body, and she donned an off-the-shoulder low-cut blouse with long, colorful skirts, and she topped the whole look off with a tambourine. Since the release of the movie in 1996, this has been the prevailing image of Romani gypsies. But Esmeralda is also hailed as a heroine in this film, which is a rare example of Romani people being seen as the good guy in the film. And many believe it's one of the least negative representations of Romani people out there, which is sad. Because even in this film, there are lines of dialogue comparing the Roma to cockroaches, saying they're not worthy or capable of love. Overall, I really enjoyed the creation of this episode. I learned so much, and I hope that all of you learned a lot as well. If there's anyone out there that has more information about the Romani people, I would really love to have a conversation with you and learn even more and see how I can be helpful to the Roma generation today. I would also love to hear all of your thoughts and opinions on the term gypsy and whether or not it should or shouldn't be used or what your experience is with it. I think it's a really interesting topic to discuss and I'm open to it. I want to remind you all that as for right now, we are changing the schedule up a little bit, and instead of having a mini episode go up every Friday, I am going to do one full-length news episode per month. And I am putting together a list of stories right now that I am considering covering. But if there's anything that you want me to specifically cover on the show, please reach out to me on Instagram at Your Angry Neighborhood Feminist and send me a DM, or feel free to email me at neighborhoodfeminist@gmail.com. I do read absolutely everything, so please send in your suggestions and your topics, and I will be more than happy to give you what you're asking for. I do have a Taylor Swift, The Tortured Poets Department bonus episode planned for Patreon right now. And I also have another episode that I wrote a while ago that I never got to record for Patreon. I sincerely apologize to all of my patrons at the moment. As always, I am constantly changing my level of busyness with all of the different freelance jobs that I work, so I really appreciate your patience, but I do have some really fantastic stuff coming up, and now that my schedule has died down and I am starting to feel better, I will be able to record some more. I do think I'm going to have a little bit of a vocal rest after this incredibly long recording today, though, on my end. But if you want to join Patreon and support the show, I would absolutely love it. You can go to patreon.com/angryneighborhoodfeminist and join any tier that works best for you. And a free way to support the show is by going to your Apple Podcast app and leaving a 5-star review with a quick sentence about why you enjoy the show, and also rating me on Spotify. All right, everyone, I think that's everything I had to fill you in on. I love you all so much. With all of that being said, I encourage you to rage on. Bye.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Burntwine, erstwhile monk turned traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.